make them really accessible to Christians that are, you know, in the neighborhood, in the marketplace, to demonstrate that this is something that is really doable for the average believer. In 1980, I started writing, and I wrote a book called Evangelism as a Lifestyle. The reason I wrote it was I'd spent a couple of years up here in the U.S. working on the philosophy of ministry for the Navigators. And as I got around and spoke to Christian groups and churches and so on, I realized that there really was a problem when it came to plugging into the lost in our society. Also, it was obvious at that time that we were moving into the spiritual ice age that we talked about in our first session, and it seemed that nobody was perceiving it. And so that's what prompted me to write this first book. So wrote it, and it got published, and I went back to my business there in Latin America, and I began to get letters. I thought I'd said what I had to say about evangelism, and I was going to go on to other things, but the letters asked all kinds of questions. And I remember getting one letter from a guy, and he asked so many questions that I thought, if I answer this letter, I mean, it's another manuscript. So I thought, well, really, I guess I haven't said what needs to be said, because there's an awful lot of ambiguity left in what needs to be said. So I wrote Evangelism for Our Generation. Well, about that time, that was about 1985, 84, and about that time got a letter from a gentleman by the name of Joe Coggeshall. And he said, we're thinking about doing a video series on your two books. Would you be willing to help us? Well, I was in Brazil. He was up here. And the idea of using video to communicate hadn't quite registered in my head yet, that this is a visual society and that's how people really learn. And so, you know, in my own provincialism, I was kind of very cold on the idea. Wasn't that right, dear? I mean, that was the last thing I wanted to do. Well, then we moved up to the U.S. Coggeshall kept coming after me. Finally, he said, we're going to do it whether you help us or not. And then I saw what they had roughed out as the content that they were going to use, and I thought, hey, I better get into it just to save what I have written so that it comes out resembling what I've been trying to communicate. Well, 4 years and I don't know how many hours later of our time and effort and so on, out came this Living Proof video series. And it's a very interesting thing. I'm surprised that it turned out the way it did after the struggle that we went through. What we do in these 12 sessions is we have a storyline that runs, if you just play it, it runs about 2.5 hours, and it plays like a movie. There's a couple, people move in next door, and they try to plug in with them and begin to evangelize them. One couple's Christian, the other one is not. The non-Christians want nothing to do with what's going on. And so all of the problems that you can possibly imagine encountering when you're trying to share your faith happen in this video series. Well, then there was this body of content. And if there's anything I hate watching a video is a talking head, you know, where someone stands there and looks at you and just rambles on and on, like I'm doing right now with you. So we thought, now how are we going to get past that? Watched Stand and Deliver. How many of you have seen this movie, Stand and Deliver, about what's the name of his Escobed or something like that? This professor out in California. The whole thing takes place in a classroom. And I thought, well, we can make content interesting if we put it into an interactive environment. And so that's how we got past having a talking head. And so we have two different storylines going at the same time. Makes it more interesting to watch. One of the things that I found really interesting as we got into this and worked on it is that just about every person that got involved in it, God really used it in their lives. The people that produced it, profound transformations. The actors were all professionals, most of them not Christians. Some came to Christ in the process of doing the series. We're going to show you one tonight, series 11, where it's the making the decision. It talks about the dynamic between the emotions, the will, and the intellect. And the guy that is the actor, not a believer, when he got done shooting it, he said, That's where I am in my own spiritual pilgrimage, struggling with these things. So, just to give you an overview of how it flows, we start out talking about the culture gap. We started out here Sunday night talking about the culture and where it is and how we need to respond to it. In this session, it gets a lot more specific than we were because it's dialogue and so on. Session two, our spiritual resources. We talked about that this morning, the place of the Holy Spirit, the incarnation of the gospel, prayer, the use of the scriptures, many decisions. We talked about that this morning, too. Instead of trying to get a person to make a quantum leap into the kingdom from 80 yards out, take it a step at a time. It's a lot nicer to take the trip that way than to try to make it all at once. Finding common ground. We're going to get into that one now. In your notebooks, you have some pink sheets. Find those. And what we're going to do is put ourselves through a living proof session. And so these people up here, they didn't realize it when they signed on, but we're going to subject them to a discussion on this particular topic. Then we're going to turn it over to you. And we'll have you just form into groups of six. Just take your chairs and sit in groups of six, and we'll turn you loose on some more questions here. Now, just to show you how easy it is to use this, we'll start out. Let's suppose that here we are. We're in our living room, and I'm about ready to turn the TV set on. And so I say, reading from the script, a blind person in prison can hardly be expected to initiate a friendship that will lead toward Christ. This blind person, we talked about him too, the first night. Isaiah 61, remember Jesus talking about his job was to go to people in prison who are blinded. That's where this idea comes from. When we understand that an unbeliever is blind, in chains, in prison, which is the description Jesus made, then obviously we've got to make the first move because they can't come to us because they're blind, they're imprisoned, and so on. So we have to make the first move, and that's what it says here. So it's up to us to make the first move. In this session, we'll start learning how to cultivate by taking the initiative and developing common ground with unbelievers. We'll also look at reasons why we resist making friends with unbelievers and explore ways to overcome these barriers. Now, can you identify with these needs? Is this something that you feel? Well, okay, then there's a 10-minute warm-up, which we, because of the clock, will ignore. And we'll go right to the video, which is 20 minutes long. This time, our group members learn how to establish common ground between themselves and the non-Christians in their world. They also have to face some reasons why making friends and finding common ground with unbelievers can be challenging, or let's say tension-producing. As you watch this segment, consider the following. Now, this is what we want you to watch for as we look at this 20-minute video series. What keeps believers and unbelievers apart? What are the things that keep them apart? And what brings them together? So those are the two questions, and we'll turn the TV on, and we'll wheel this out of the way and bring it back when...
Never seen anything like that. One minute he was perfectly fine, the next minute he was lying on the floor in agony. It scared me to death, Bill. I'm not kidding. I've never been so helpless in all my life. And I'm just glad you work across the street.
Well, I'm sorry you had to go through that, Jerry. I really am. I just can't imagine what that must have been like.
Well, man, it was a nightmare.
You know, so what did you say?
Honest truth?
Yeah.
I wanted to lie to him. I wanted to tell him how God had helped me overcome that kind of fear, right? Mm. But I'd never faced anything like that. So I told him the truth. I told him about my cholesterol count, how it got me scared, and how I started listening to the doctor after I knew I was in trouble.
What did he say?
Well, he said I was lucky to get a warning and that he was going to call and make a checkup that very same day.
So, Bill, why do you think Jerry came to you?
I guess he needed to talk. I guess he feels comfortable talking to me, if you can imagine that.
Yeah, I guess he did. And I think that's great. I mean, the fact that he felt that comfortable with you.
Well, yeah, I didn't give him any big answers, though.
Yeah, but Bill, you also didn't preach to him.
No, I didn't preach to him. You think it was a mistake, though?
No, not from what you told us about Jerry. I think you gave him something that he needed a lot more than a sermon.
Steve, you've got to give up these dramatic pauses. Tell the man what you think.
Well, all right, for one thing, you listened when he really needed to talk. And for another thing, it seems like you really opened him up. I mean, made it safe for him to get beneath the surface. Now, ladies, this is a really big thing. I mean, most men haven't had that kind of an invitation since they were boys.
I think you also established common ground. I mean, he'll trust you much more now that he knows you're vulnerable, too.
Wait, well, you guys are losing me.
Well, he knows that you're not self-contained now. He knows that you need something outside of yourself. And since he's had a glimpse of his own mortality, he knows that you two share the same humanity. Now, that's something he probably wouldn't have even questioned before, but that's only because he hadn't thought of it. Now he has.
You think he'll get as serious about his spirit as he is about his heart now?
Who knows? I mean, he may not even follow through with the checkup.
I think he will. I think poor Raleigh got him scared.
Yeah. Well, can we just shift gears here a little bit? Somebody tell me some ways that Jesus found common ground everywhere.
Well, for one thing, he showed more often than he told.
And speaking of dramatic pauses.
Oh, well, he told stories and parables and he made metaphors.
I love those.
And asked questions.
Sometimes even answered questions with questions. Mm-hmm. A little like you do sometimes, Steve.
I wish. Okay, all right. But the point is that Jesus found common ground everywhere. I mean, he talked about being born again to Nicodemus. Now, that's a strange metaphor to us, but to Nicodemus, in his context, it was real powerful.
He talked to a woman about drawing water from a well. The fisherman, he talked fish. But Jesus always spoke in plain terms, you know, the bread and water, sheep, thieves, the lost coins, the lost sons, all the stuff of everyday life.
He made common ground out of common ground. In the parable of the soils. And then he moved from common ground to an uncommon understanding. You're thirsty for more than water. You're hungry for more than bread.
And people will listen to that if we've cultivated their trust. Rebecca Pippert wrote somewhere that a good way to establish a link with someone who's not a Christian is to identify with the other's weaknesses. The line goes something like, when I was in a situation much like that, Jesus meant the world to me, and here's how.
Yes, I read that.
Do you remember?
Too.
Right. And what is it to keep us from making those kind of connections all the time?
I think it's fear.
Or selfishness.
Pride. Lack of trust in God. Lack of creativity.
Judgment.
Linda and Jerry are not the only people we know.
You watch the show, Jackie. I thought you wanted to make new friends. I thought we were in this together. It's just one Saturday night, for crying out loud.
Well, we are in this together, aren't we? Now that it's too late to make any difference.
have nothing in common with the high school kids I'm talking to.
Well, at least you don't have to live next door to them.
Well, no, not yet. But, you know, there are a couple of those girls who would like to move in with us. I don't think it's a very good idea, but even so...
You would consider it?
Yes, I would. You know, some of those girls are really in trouble. But still, Anne...
Oh, listen, I'm so glad you could join us tonight. I hope you enjoyed it.
Boy, you know I did. It's been a long time since I've been to a concert.
We haven't had a chance to eat. Why don't the two of you join us for a late supper?
Oh, yes, come on. We'd love to have you. It's my turn to cook.
Oh, don't be impressed. That just means he's going to take us out. Hayden lives in his own little world.
Shall we go?
Sure. Now, for many of us, common ground with unbelievers is uncomfortable ground. It's going to challenge the boundaries of our comfort zone to build these relationships. But when we're creative and trust God for opportunities, we will be amazed at the results.
To play catch up around here.
Well, listen, we are here to deliver you from this.
I wish.
No. You don't understand. Tim Olson invited us to his private lake, okay? Watch my lips. Private lake. It's teeming with the biggest, hungriest, dumbest bass in North America. Gotta go, Jared. Gotta go.
You guys are getting in a lot of trouble.
Now, listen. I know how you like to fish. I helped you unload your gear, all right? Nick and I are here to help you. We get 2 hours to finish up before we have to meet Olson. Big fish, big dumb fish, this big.
Gotta do it.
What do you say?
You're serious?
Yes.
What do I say? I say, what are you staying around for? Go to work. Come on.
Try to keep them under control.
Jackie! Hey! Oh, great! Hey, I hope you don't mind, but an old friend dropped into town unexpectedly. We're having a good time. It got a little bit late, so I brought him. Raz, front and center, come on, man.
Yeah, I want you to meet Bill's better half, Jackie.
Jackie, meet the Raz man, Bill Razinski.
Hey, how you doing?
No, come on, guys. Leave those things outside.
Hey, I didn't want to come empty-handed, you know.
Bill?
Bill? How you doing?
Hey, Raz. Hey,
say hello to Walt and Ann, right? Yeah, Ann.
Hi, Walt.
Hello,
Matt.
Hi, Ann.
How you doing?
Yeah.
Are you just new in town, too, or...?
Yeah.
Yeah,
our friends. Oh, I see.
They brought a friend, and he brought three friends.
I wonder where the rest of this little family is tonight.
This is not funny, Bill. You go out there and do something.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Well, listen, why don't you put those in the fridge? Or, well, maybe not.
Linda, don't worry. Any friend of yours.
Is a friend of yours.
So, Raz, huh? Is that your real name?
Yeah, no, it's a nickname. Matter of fact, I don't think anybody but Jerry would call me that anymore. Phil is my real name. Philip. Raz is short for Razuski. R-A-S-O-U-S-K-E. Ah, my wife. Yeah, she might still call me Raz.
Yeah. Where did you two meet?
My wife?
No, you and Jerry.
Vietnam. Same company in Saigon.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what can I do? You could help me run away from home.
I told you Bill married better than Jackie.
Bill, you was just telling me about his son.
The man's name is Raz.
See? He was just telling me about himself.
Well, watch out. What you don't know can't hurt you.
Huh? Hey. That's right. That's right. The less you know, the better you feel. So hold your nose at every meal.
So, can I get anybody anything to drink? Coffee? Soft drinks? Iced tea?
I believe I'll have one of those beers.
Yeah. Oh, Rez, I think I blew it. I left those beers on the counter and they're probably not cold anymore.
Hey, it's okay. I've been to Nam. I'll take it however it comes.
I kept asking myself, what would Jesus do? But all I kept thinking is, why doesn't Jesus do something?
And I finished the night feeling like a complete failure. You know, things looked so good when Jerry came to my office the other day, like there was going to be this breakthrough. And then Raz. And if I had any idea they were going to put Jackie through that.
But did you plan that, Bill?
No.
Folks, our time is gone. And then some. Listen, I want you to have some homework for next week. I think you'll find it thought-provoking in light of Bill and Jackie's story. Then again, you may just find it provoking. I want you to read 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 19 through 23. And I want you to read it every day between now and next week, okay? So how about if we pray and go home?
I would have never believed it.
What?
We had a really good time tonight at the Warners. Bill, Raz really hit it off. Too bad Jackie was feeling so bad, the evening would have been a lot better with her.
And I wish I could have joined her.
Nothing.
Good night.
Jackie, I know you're awake. Honey.
Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now these folks here are on camera. And we're going to start out with this question 3. You've got it in your pink pages here. We'll start with the first question. We're going to just get into it, and then we'll turn you loose on it. The question is, what keeps believers and unbelievers apart? Let's just talk about that.
A cultural gap.
Okay, let's pass this around.
Well, it's a cultural gap. Okay, a cultural gap between... Christian, non-Christian lifestyle, background, experience, alcohol, no alcohol, those types of things that make us feel uncomfortable in our comfort zone.
Okay.
I think we also get ourselves into a cocoon. We do separate from our friends that were our friends before we knew Christ, and that the circle we run with is believers. It's believers that we see in church, believers that we see in the choir, believers that we see at school, and we don't even know them. We don't have non-Christian friends, a lot of us.
Okay, but why does that create tension? The fact that you don't know.
We can't even get together because we're not even in a common area. We don't socialize together. We don't go to movies together. We don't go to lunch together. Mm-hmm. And I think we're apart by definition.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think one of the things is a stereotype coming from both sides.
Uh-huh.
You know, that of the Christian as being a prim and proper, goody-two-shoes kind of a person. You know, doesn't touch a drop of alcohol, wouldn't smoke, wouldn't cuss. And from the flip side, you know, the Christian looking at the pagan as some kind of a heathen person who drinks and smokes and cusses and is good for nothing.
Okay.
That's a big chasm, I think.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
Well, I think it just matter, you know, boils down to the choices that we make, the Christian, as they learn and grow in the Lord, that they make other choices to choose not to use tobacco, alcohol, foul language, etc. Whereas the non-believer, they made the choices based on what they know at the time, mm-hmm. and what pleases them, what brings them pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts on what keeps Christian and non-Christian apart?
I think in part that the non-Christian judges us. You know, we have God's grace. We know that we've sinned, and we know that we all fall short of His glory. But I think the non-Christian holds us to a higher standard and looks at us kind of like what Dana said, the goody-two-shoes, that we're somehow better than they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that keeps a distance. I don't think they want to be judged any more than we want to be judged, but that keeps them away from us. We don't have a common ground.
Okay.
I saw a couple things just from the movie. One of them was they were afraid that those kids of the other couple would be a bad influence on their own kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can handle a relationship with an unbeliever, but I'm not sure I want my kids playing with kids that do things and see things and say things. So I think there's a protection of your kids' need that keeps you apart. Another thing I see that keeps people apart, not just unbelievers and believers, but everybody, is this time issue. I mean, I don't know, when's the last time my husband had 2 hours to help in somebody else's yard and then go fishing? You know, and we just don't have time for that. We get so busy.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't have time to really build a relationship, or we don't make time. Maybe it's a choice.
What are you busy at?
Church. Well, church, kids, soccer games, stuff.
Okay.
Taking a nap after the week.
Okay. All right. Great performance. Now, what we're going to do, we want everybody to just pick up your chair and head for a group of 4 or 5. We want to just form into groups of 6 right here in the room. Okay? Let's do that. And then you can continue as a group right here where you are. And what we're going to do, take your pink sheets along or you're going to be at a loss. And we're going to spend just about 15 minutes at this. We want you to answer questions 7 and 8. All right, are we in our groups? All right, I'll tell you what to do in a minute. Okay, now, let's see. We got too many in this group. Everybody won't get a chance to talk if you have too many in a group. So, I guess you're stuck with it. That's okay. Now, we need a leader in every group. All right? The person with the largest shoe size is the leader, okay? So you got to find out who has the largest shoes, and that person is the leader. Now. You got the leadership sorted out? I know that we've discriminated against women in this. Okay, now, the questions we want to deal with We're just going to take about 15 minutes, and so we can't spend an awful lot of time on any single question, so you want to move through it. We just want to get an experience here. I think question four, it sounded like we had an impasse here. They're over here. They have a particular set of their lifestyle is one thing. Our lifestyle is another. There's such a chasm. There's no way that we can connect. Answer question four, deal with question four, then deal with question seven. And so just go at it until I let you know that the time is up, and then we'll go on and see the 11th session. Okay, it looks like you'd rather talk to one another than listen to me. I can't understand that. Okay, just turn your chairs around wherever you are, and don't worry about putting them in order, just so that you can get a look at the TV screen here. Well, how did it go?
Good.
Is that good?
Yeah, great.
All right. One of the things that we've found is that you can do it in an hour if you don't do a whole lot of discussing. It's a lot better to allow yourselves an hour and a half or so for a session. It's being used a lot in churches, and usually the schedule is a one-hour time frame, and it using it that way has an impact. What it does is it gives a person the basic, the broad outline, the basic concepts about sharing their faith, so that they understand that there are ways to do it that are different from the stereotype notions that they've grown up with and they've been intimidated by and have given up on. But the first time around, what I've observed is that the first time around, especially if you do it weekly, the first time around is not enough to really absorb the content, because there are a lot of concepts that are there. There are action steps that are there that need to be taken. And so one of the best ways to make it work is to go through it, say, in 12 weeks, give people the broad concept, and then move it into a house church environment or a mini church or whatever, you know, the small group environment, where you have a little bit more flexibility of time, and then do a session once a month. After they've had the overview of 12 weeks, then go back and do a session once a month, slow it down, so that you can do the action steps, so that there is time to practice the things that are suggested. There are small things, like in this fourth session, have a half-hour conversation with a non-Christian about anything under the sun. It can be, you know, jokes about Hillary Clinton or anything. Just talk to a non-Christian for a half hour. And so that's your assignment. And the next time there's another assignment that is doable. And so, but there needs to be time for a person to digest the ideas and really internalize the concepts that we're working on in each session. And so my suggestion is go through it twice. We're going to see session 11, but then let me just kind of talk us up to what the context of chapter 11, or session 11. Finding common ground, here we are, it's we and they. It's what we just saw. And boy, that distance sometimes just seems impossible. Then we wrestle with the problem of being a good testimony. And it's the dilemma of, what about our scruples? What about these three little Budweisers that came in? You know, what do we do with that? And if we accept the Budweisers, are we ruining our testimony, or are we improving it? What do we do with that? And so we wrestle with those things. Then session six, can we please everyone? Again, we're talking about the tensions that we feel in the disparity between Christian conduct and the conduct of the unbeliever. Strategies for sowing the word. How to get people interested in the scriptures. After you've just, you know, you've been talking about Hillary Clinton for 3 months, now you're talking about the scriptures. And so strategies for sowing the word. How do you get into that? The problem of time. I've heard this over and over again here. Man, where do you find time for that? And so we deal with that. And the relationship between teamwork and resolving the time crunch that we face. Then guiding through the scriptures. I talked about that a little bit this morning, how it takes, you do not have to be a prophet or a son of a prophet to open the scriptures with an unbeliever and go through it. It is not that big a deal, and we show you how to do it. And then the next one, sparking interest with questions. I think that's one of the fears that we have. We're always afraid they're going to ask us a question that we're not going to be able to answer. Well, obviously they're going to ask us a question we're not going to be able to answer. The best thing is to say, I don't know, and go on. There are other questions that people ask that you can't answer because it's out of sequence. For example, a person who says, well, I'm not sure that I believe in God. I think that there might be some kind of energy out there, obviously, but I don't think that there's a cognate being. And so then he'll ask a question in the next breath, how can God be just when he does this and that and the other thing? Well, how can you explain the justice of a God that he doesn't believe in? And so often there are questions that get out of sequence. Well, we give suggestions on how to deal with that and how to affirm a person with their questions. Questions are trial balloons. They want to see how you're going to respond. And if you respond defensively or whatever with a question, that's the last question the person's going to ask. And so answering questions is an art. Asking questions is an art. And we get into that. And then the next one is making the decision. And as I said before, it deals with the problem of the emotion, the intellect, and the will. And I think that this is really critical also. There's a lot of debate going on. In fact, several people wrote several books about what is conversion. Some people say there's got to be a lordship where you give everything over to Christ. Some people say just a sinner's prayer is enough, and there's controversy between those two positions. And we deal with what is a decision that results in transformation. And then launching the new believer, okay, where do we go from here? So let's have the lights, and let's watch session 11.
Steve, but let's say this. Let's say a young man meets a young woman.
Oh, that's been known to happen.
And they're both immediately drawn to each other. And they begin to think, hey, this could be it. This is a person I could spend my wife with.
Excuse me? This is a person I could spend my...
spend my wife with? What? Well, what did I say?
You're doing fine, Walt.
So the two of them are emotionally attracted to each other. And if that's all there is to it, well, there'll probably be a wedding pretty much right away.
Walt, depending on who you're talking about, they might skip the wedding.
Exactly, Dolores. But no matter who we're talking about, they're probably not going to do anything based strictly on emotions. You see, the mind enters the picture. And then they begin to ask each other important questions.
Does he have opposing thumbs? Does he walk upright? Can he speak in complete sentences?
Come on, Bill. Walt's being serious.
Oh, I know, Walt. I'm sorry. I get goofy when I get tired. I'm going to get some fresh air. So
listen,
there.
All I'm trying to say is that people probably aren't going to get married on impulse. They feel it, but then they think about it, too. And they ask all the important questions they can think of, but then they still have to contend with their wills. If they can answer the questions that their minds have raised, then they've got to ask themselves, am I willing to change the way I live? Am I willing to give up making decisions based on what I want and for the rest of my life? See, once they know what they're getting into, it's only when the will agrees with the mind and the emotions that that marriage can take place.
And you think that coming towards Christ is like that?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Can't you wait? So do I, Walt. That's a very powerful example.
It's open. Come on in. Hey.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, listen, I was on my way to the hardware store. I thought maybe you might need some. You said something about some toggle bolts or something. Oh, no, I got them last night. Thanks.
Oh, okay. Well, can I buy a cup of coffee?
You bet.
Oh, good. It's free. I'll take a free cup of coffee.
I was just thinking about the Bible study.
Really? Yeah. Does it make sense to you?
Well, it's, What do I think?
Well, there are moments of real clarity, and then, well, it seems to me that if Jesus actually fed all those people, They would have known that he was someone to be reckoned with. But then the claim that he fed 5,000 people on what? 5 loaves of bread? 2 fish? That makes no sense at all. See, it's factors like this that spoil the obvious good in this. Yes, one minute I am feeling so good about this guy, the next minute you're on the line saying not possible and I'm crashing. This is a real roller coaster. You're toying with me. Just where do you think this is heading? Look, I am very suspicious about this. If they think I am giving up my Sundays, they are badly mistaken. Hey, come on. I feel if these guys wanted anything from me, they would have asked for it by now. Come on. I'm not worried. Then maybe they've got you right where they want you. I did some reading on cults some time back, and it seems to me that this acceptance thing is one of their strategies. Now I'm worried. You should be. They're talking big changes here. Big. I'm not ready for that. Come on, don't be so hard on them. I mean, they're nice people. I mean, they mean well. I don't feel any judgment. Except from Jackie. I'm feeling some change there. Well, I think it just goes with being a Christian. You see, that's exactly what I mean. Now I am so frustrated.
Calm down.
Just calm down. It can't be as simple as that. There must be another angle. After all, Bill is a Christian, and so is Walt and Nick and Marjorie. There must be another explanation. I hope you find it soon. Don't count on it.
Well, it's interesting, but I've got a lot of questions. Things like, what about other religions?
Other religions. Good question.
I have a difficult time thinking that Christians are right and all those other people are wrong. I mean, all of them are wrong. Christians are right.
Let's see if I can respond in a couple of ways here. First of all, this guy named Dostoevsky wrote somewhere that a person cannot live without worshiping something. And you know, Jerry, I look around at the world and I'm not surprised to see that people are worshiping all sorts of things in a whole variety of ways. Now, what you're probably talking about are the more obvious traditional religions like Judaism and Islam and those kinds of things. Well, let me just throw out a couple of things, a couple of less obvious things like materialism and success, things that people give themselves to in such a degree that, as far as I can tell, those things actually become their religious devotion. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. But let me ask you this. You've actually read Dostoevsky?
I can barely pronounce his name. I read that somewhere, Jerry. I don't know.
I didn't think he had read Dostoevsky.
But the point is, if this guy's right, if he's right, then people can take anything they want to and make a religion out of it. And then the question is, whether or not what they've chosen to worship, can it really and truly satisfy them? Do you get what I'm saying?
Tell him you'll get back to him on that.
Now, that's interesting. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah, I thought you'd find that fairly interesting to consider. Now, second way I'd like to respond is that I don't actually think that I have this all figured out. In fact, I don't believe anybody does. For me, it goes back to the question, who is Jesus? I mean, if he was who we really understand him to be, then yes, we have an absolute for a starting point. So to have a relationship with God isn't a religion. What you might see as a religion is really just the way we organize ourselves when we get together. That's an outside view. Do you remember in John, first chapter of John, where it says, you got your Bible handy? Grab it. There it is. First chapter, verses 10 through 12. The back section, there. It's page 1158.
Hurry up! Oh, criminy, I hate this part. I feel like such an idiot. Would you hurry up, please?
Okay, here it is. I got it. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God.
You see, if John is right about that, and I'm absolutely convinced he is, then it's not about whether or not my religion is right and everything. It's about whether or not Jesus is God. To be a Christian is to have a relationship with God through Jesus Christ.
This is making me uncomfortable.
Right.
Ask him about suffering.
I think I'm tracking with you, Bill, but I'm going to have to give that some more thought. So what about suffering? Things like that.
Precisely. I have a difficult time understanding how a God who is supposed to be so loving could allow what goes on in the world with war and famine, things like that. How do you deal with that?
How do you see God in war and famine?
Man, you are really thinking about this, Jerry. I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, quietly. I want to hear this. You mind?
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to claim to have the final say on this, but I'll see if I can give it a shot here. I think the kinds of things you're talking about are the result of people choosing what they want and not what God wants. As an expression of love, God has given us the chance to choose between good and evil and life and death. And when people who are in power make wrong decisions like sending their country into war, then the consequences of that, both short term and in the long run, are pain and death. Now, I've seen you working on this on a much smaller scale with your son, Eric. You outline the options. You give him a choice. If he chooses badly, then you've learned to respect his decision just as much as if he had chosen well. And the reason I know this is that I overheard you on the driveway the other night. You said you were surprised. You said you were surprised when Eric made the decision not to drive the car for a week. Right?
Right, right.
Right, yeah. He said, wait a minute. I didn't choose not to drive the car for a week. And I said, oh, yes, you did, Eric, when you chose to bring it home with less than a quarter tank of gas in it.
And then you reminded him that you had all agreed to that standard. And he said, well, he only agreed because you made him. And you said, and I remember so clearly, you said,
I said, son, this is reality. You can't always get what you want.
And what were you trying to do there, Jerry?
Well, I wanted him to know that I take him seriously. Mm-hmm. That his words and actions have consequences. I don't want him to be surprised by that when he's on his own. I want him to learn that life is what it is, not what he wants it to be.
Makes sense.
I'm still not sold on the Bible. It makes me nervous to depend all this on a book.
A book thousands of years old. Now, I know we've been over this before, but I'm still not convinced. I guess I need more evidence before I...
I'm sorry. I'm just not comfortable with all this. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's all so new. Will you get hold of yourself?
No. Take your time. That's fine. I mean, these are key issues.
I must tell you, this is beginning to make sense. It's starting to come together like a puzzle. Not that I'm rolling over, you understand. But it is starting to come together. Hey, well, maybe you're right. You know, actually, I believed it always would. Bill is a real friend. You know, I was 12 years old the last time I had a friend who could have a good time and tell the truth. Oh, this is good. This is good. I feel good about this.
So everything from, hello, my name is Steve, to an in-depth Bible study is essentially aimed at cultivating the non-Christian's emotional readiness.
Well, that sounds pretty calculated.
Well, the Lord, if it is, then we've lost already. Christ came to seek and save the lost, not to manipulate them.
So attitude makes a difference.
Oh, you bet. Maybe the difference. See, as you cultivate a friendship, emotional barriers are broken down. Do you remember that discussion that Bill and I had about barriers over lunch one day? It went something like this. Now, if the point of conversion is over here, and Jerry is over here, you can be sure that he can't see the cross for all of the debris in between. And this is a whole mixture of emotional and intellectual issues, combined with one tough decision of the will. Will I trust Jesus Christ? Bill helps Jerry deal with the barriers one at a time through a series of mini decisions. Today it's, okay, so you don't have to be a jerk to be a Christian. Tomorrow it's, I wonder what it is about Bill that attracts me to him. And so on until after patiently raising the flag over and over and utilizing faith stories whenever they're appropriate, the day comes when Bill asks Jerry if he'd like to look at the Bible, and Jerry says, Okay. By this time, a whole bunch of the barriers, especially a lot of the emotional barriers, are gone. If they weren't, Jerry would have never said yes.
And you're saying that Bill could have rushed that invitation?
Of course. It's like picking green fruit.
How does that account for the people I've met who responded to the gospel the first time I talked to them?
The cultivation was probably already done. God used others before you to prepare that person. You were there at the right moment. Mm. It was time for the harvest phase of the process, right? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you something.
Shoot.
I sort of get the impression that most of your questions have been asked and answered. Am I right?
I'd say for the most part that's true. More or less.
Careful. Then would you say that the real issue here is whether or not you're going to trust God with your life?
So timing is important. You ask a challenging question about the will too soon and you risk making him feel cornered, like you're out to change him.
Which could spoil the trust you've cultivated with unconditional love.
Now, you see how the... Yeah, Jackie.
See, this is where I still struggle. I'm having a very hard time accepting these people unconditionally. I mean, Jerry's brooding really bothers me. And Linda's sweet since I've gotten to know her, but still.
And Raz?
Oh, don't get me started about Raz. That man's from another world. No, I mean it. I just can't relate to him. I'm sorry,
Jackie,
I just can't relate to
him. Look, I'm getting to know Raz in a whole new light, and I think you're being kind of hard on the guy. Look, he needs Jesus just like you or me, but he...
Well, that's no comfort to me. He may need Jesus like you do, but I have never needed Jesus like he does. Walt, I'm sorry, I didn't mean...
Excuse me. What's that? Somebody tell me what's going on here?
Well, I hadn't really thought about it that way, but I guess that's about it. It's about come down to whether or not I'll trust God with my life.
Boy, do I know what you're going through. At least I know what it feels like to sort of be where you are a few years back. Remember that attorney friend of mine, the one I was telling you about that helped set me straight when my life was so near the edge? What I didn't finish telling you was that we were looking at the Bible together, just like we're doing. And boy, it was a real mix for me. You know, it made so much sense, and some of it I just couldn't accept. So anyway, we were doing this study, and it was in the Gospel of John. And I was really in a struggle, Jer. I really was, and I got to a point where I think you are now. And I was stymied. I didn't know what to do. And my friend said, Bill, buddy, it's your will. If all of your questions have been answered and you can't think of any reason to trust Christ, it's your will. Boy, that hit me. I couldn't get away from it. Jer, I slept awful that night. The next morning I was stuck in traffic and I replayed it over and over in my mind. I got to the office, I canceled my appointments, had my calls held, and I just sort of sat there at my desk for a long time. Eventually I started reading John right from the top, and when I got to John 8, bell went off. I'd always been convinced that I had to be good before I became a Christian. Well, this was a key insight for me, because God accepts us the way we are now. In fact, we're going to be studying the same passage in tonight's Bible study. Hey, listen, I've got something I want to show you here. This little booklet that my attorney friend shared with me, it just sort of summarizes everything we've been talking about, and it's really been helpful to me. Why don't you take a look at it? Maybe we can get together this week and talk about it.
This is amazing. I mean, here's a woman who's obviously done something very, very wrong, and she's been caught outright, But Jesus is the one who dismisses the ones who have caught her, and he pardons her right there on the spot.
Exactly. I know just what you mean. What I meant when I thought that. See, I never thought I could be good enough to become a Christian. Therefore, I thought I could never become a Christian.
I just realized something. I'm one of the people Jesus sent away. I spent my whole life finding fault with people, feeling so self-righteous. I honestly believed I never did anything that needed forgiving. I've been an incredible hypocrite.
Pick up the kids. Be fun to talk about this a little bit, but I think you get the picture. You see that there's a lot of content there. There's a lot to think about. You're not going to get it the first time around. I think for me, this section I think shows the dynamic of a genuine decision and the incredible importance of allowing space for the person to wrestle his way through these things. And when we push it, what happens is you get a premature birth, and often it's a stillbirth. But if you can back off, give it the kind of time and space that we see here, there will be a true transformation. Let's call it a night, and we'll meet down in the music room, those of you who have questions that you want to interact on, and we'll go till... My wife got after me last night for getting home so late, so we'll go till 10... And then call it a night. So you're dismissed.